Devin, who is it?
That's Luca from Hooverphonic.
Yes, and Belgium's Hooverphonic have announced that she is out of the group and will not be singing at Eurovision 2021. We're going to kick the podcast off with a discussion on that. We move along to Estonia, which has revealed the 24 semifinalists, and it includes some very familiar names.
This just feels like an ever-revolving door of repeat performers.
We're going to head over to Albania, where our man Erdi has some very important news about the orchestra.
I can't wait to hear the update on that one.
Hola, España is calling and they are asking, why do we do better at Junior Eurovision than Eurovision?
Spain votes for Spain at Junior.
We've been running a series of polls on Wubi Blogs asking you to name your favorite non-qualifiers, and we are going to walk through Wubi Blogger Robin's picks from four countries. They are Albania, Austria, Armenia, and Andorra.
She is my favorite outlier.
And we're going to finish in Sweden, where there are rumors that Erik Saade, Arvin Garna, and Paul Rey are all returning to Melodifestivalen, and we'll also discuss the one female songwriter per entry quota, which has been scrapped.
I'm all about equality.
Devin, are you ready? Now, Devin, what do you get when you combine something that sucks and the word phonic?
Hooverphonic.
Yes, Hoover, the quality vacuum. Look, the hopes were very, very high when this group was first revealed as Belgium's Eurovision 2020 act. The three-piece included the amazing, young, vibrant vocalist Luca Kruusbergs, but she is out. The group has announced that Gaika Arnett, a former vocalist, will rejoin the band. Broadcaster VRT has already confirmed that Gaika will be going to Eurovision along with the band's founders, Alex Callier and Raymond Gertz. The group, in a press release, described their reunion with Gaika. They say, "We met again, we started chatting, all three of us were eager to work together again, so we felt we had to do this. It is still the core Hooverphonic, which is synonymous with the band for many people. It's that simple." And Hooverphonic's Luca has responded on Instagram. She said, "After 3 years with Hooverphonic, it's time to go my own way. I am very grateful for all the chances, lots of tours, amazing experiences and memories I've got. I wish Hooverphonic official and Gaika official all the best. Stay tuned for my next steps. Are you ready for me?" And she added Universal Music Belgium. Now, Devin, what are you thinking?
You know what I was thinking? When she dropped that, 11,000 likes on Instagram, you know, had over 370 comments. It was, you know, she's very loved. She is very loved as part of Hooverphonic. I think she got the youth vote. She's only 19 years old and she's done an amazing job. And I think the future ahead of her is bright. I actually think this is a really smart move because she would always be credited as the lead vocalist for Eurovision, the Eurovision that never was. Which, by the way, I mean, I love the song and I picked it as a qualifier, but that was not the feeling on ground. This is very borderline. And I feel like Luca could well represent Belgium in a few years, actually, single-handedly.
So when you say it's smart for who? For her or for Hooverphonic?
Well, I don't think the decision was hers. Alex is a very, you know, he's the mastermind. You know, he's the visionary. He's the creator. He calls the shots. You know, and the fact that Gaika has returned would suggest that conversations were already happening behind Luca's back anyway. What I do feel is that, you know what, this could actually work out good for all parties involved. I think Luca has a really bright future ahead of her. I think that she is very talented. I think that she's really liked. She's in the vein of what Belgium sends to Eurovision. If you think it's very quite similar to Sinek, you know, she's got that kind of vibe, sassy, sophisticated, lounge type over, you know, that's her sort of sound. And I think she'll be internally selected in a few years anyway.
I've just got to say this, of the Hooverphonic band members, for many people, Luca was the highest light. Many people thought she brought something fresh, exciting, and vibrant to the group. And they think
only 19, but
yes, exactly. And so it was a wonderful foil to the kind of older male singers.
Can I just point out that Hooverphonic have been successful for many years preceding Luca? And actually, Gaika was the golden years of Hooverphonic. You know, they crossed over with Gaika. So they've had this revolving door of session singers, but they have been successful for a lot. I mean, you can't credit Luca for bringing them success. I think she's maintained success.
Graham Norton, during Europe Shine a Light, the broadcast, he actually said, Luca is the sixth vocalist and probably not the last. Okay, I think Alex Callier's, I don't want to say temperament, but, you know, he does what he wants. And perhaps that's one reason the group has been successful, is because he has his vision and he executes it and he believes in it. And in this case, he executed Ms. Luca. Now, these are some comments from our readers. Nobody important has the most voted comment. And he or she wrote, I'm honestly kind of happy for her. Now she can start her own career, make songs she wants, and as a massive bonus, not have to deal with Alex's attitude and ego. You go, girl, hoping you will be much bigger than Alex could only dream of being. E-Product writes, they've done Luca so dirty. It's the second time Eurovision is being taken away from her. I wasn't excited for Hooverphonic competing in Eurovision in the first place, even though I'm a fan of them, because it just doesn't seem like their thing. But Luca brought the youth, the looks, the magic, and she was their best asset. With Gaika, even though she's a fantastic singer, I'm not sure if they'll fit in the show. And unless they pull something off like the Common Linnets in 2014, which I'm confident they won't do, then I don't see them doing something outstanding nor remarkable. Also, the level of arrogance that Alex Callier has is getting more disgraceful every year. And finally, Drig writes, dirty move. Luca put her time and effort in Release Me, didn't have the chance to show her talent in Love Shine a Light, and now won't get the exposure on the big stage next May. Her career won't benefit from this. I am so angry.
But, you know, we're just assuming that Alex is behind this. I mean, it could have just been a situation. I mean, do you know the situation with En Vogue recently where Dawn Penn was asked, oh, are you ever going to join the En Vogue reunion? And she was like, well, not when Rona is in the band.
You know what she really said? She said, what? Never gonna get it, never gonna get it, never gonna get it, never gonna get it.
Oh, that was a good one. But Gaika coming back is a bit suspect. But I know Gaika, you know, once bitten, twice shy kind of scenario. She's probably going to now carve out her own terms and conditions, which would no doubt favor her. It wouldn't even surprise me if it's Hooverphonic featuring Gaika. I don't know. But it doesn't also look good if there's a lineup change, you know, in the middle of, your participation.
There was a lot of tension after Europe Shine a Light. We must remember that they were the only act that did not participate in the Love Shine a Light medley. And Alex later said he didn't feel that that gesture, you know, vibed with him. He thinks there's better ways to show support than kind of doing a sing-along. And it was very clear it was his decision. I believe hasn't been confirmed that he was the one who said no, whereas the others were keen to do it. So Luca would have done it. She was a bit more into the participatory spirit. So that's what makes me think there were tensions behind the scene that we don't know about. Like, I just feel like he's notoriously in charge and perhaps a little bristly, which if you're a young performer, maybe that doesn't go down so well with you.
It's even difficult during interviews where three of them are lined up, questions are being fired, but, you know, Alex takes the lead on every single Q&A, you know, which is a bit difficult because, you know, quite often people associate the lead singer, you know, that's where the interest lies. You want to hear from the lead singer. You want to hear what Luca thinks. But, you know, Alex jumps right in. I've been a fan of Hooverphonic for several years, and now I really respect a lot of their work and music. This is really dicey, though. It is dicey.
Final point. It's the 20th anniversary of perhaps their biggest single, and it featured Gaika. And the timing, I don't want to say it's suspect. It's quite celebratory for them. So perhaps they were thinking, how do we reclaim the heights of our career? We go back to our girl who brought it to us.
Yeah, Gaika is loved as well. But, you know, Luca was the you know, the youth vote. You know, she kind of made them more relevant, you know, kind of just fresh and more today. But, you know, for heritage reasons, Gaika has been there for a long time and she has done, you know, she's given them lots of hits and stuff. You know, I'm just happy they're back and I'm looking forward to seeing them in Rotterdam.
Deben, as you know, the FIC 59 songs are now out, and there is big news out of Tirana. This is our Erdi to bring you the latest on the orchestra. Erdi, take it away.
This year, Festivali Ikangas is Festival of First Times. This will be the 59th edition of Festivali Ikangas, and for the first time ever, there will not be a live orchestra. In the first night of festival, songs will be performed with instrumental versions. In the second night, we will listen to the unplugged or acoustic versions of the songs. And in the grand final, finalists will perform their songs again with instrumental version.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so the orchestra, one of the most exciting parts of FIC to many people, that can't happen in this new outdoor setting. Don't nobody want their cello getting wet if it rains. What do you think about this? Is this going to hurt the feel of the contest?
I think that, you know, Eurovision 2021 is turning into, you know, some sort of like Mickey Mouse Disney hangout. I mean, I'm already sick of it. They've created this new rule that you can have pre-recorded backing tracks, which some national selections have taken to the max. You know, Dora in Croatia, for instance, is saying no live backing. And, you know, now, you know, Festival Ikangas, who we've always relied on for being authentic and more traditional and promoting the musicians' spirit of Albania, is now going to go onto a backing track. I don't know. I'm just less excited by it all, really. Eurovision is just departing away from the things that I've always admired about it.
I'm over the orchestra. Let me tell you why. I think it actually hurts a country like Albania. They're notorious for doing these revamps, and that's down to them having to perform pop songs with an orchestra, which just doesn't fit. So just get rid of the orchestra. They can enter with the song and arrangement they intend to have at Eurovision itself, and they can skip the butchering of the song during the revamp. I think in terms of copy and paste, Sweden does that very well to great success because they enter their national selection with what they want to send to the actual Eurovision. Same is going to be happening in Albania. Hopefully there won't be 5-minute dirges, you know, with the orchestral accompaniment. Instead, it'll be the 3-minute final production piece you want to have at ESC.
I don't know. I disagree. You know, there's part of the reason why I don't go to Melody Festivalen anymore, just because, you know, what you see there is just copy and paste. It offers no surprise. I don't feel a sense of journey with it. Whereas, you know, some of the other contests, it's just kind of exciting to watch how the song progresses, how possibilities are explored, rather than, you know, this is such a finished product, we're just going to lift it from Gothenburg and just plonk it in Tel Aviv. I'm just less excited about that, really.
Girl, I'd rather watch a sprint than a marathon. Ain't nobody got time for that. Yes, Devin, that is who?
Tanya!
Yes, Tanya, Eurovision 2014. She is one of the 24 semifinalists that have been confirmed in Estonia. Others include Eurovision 2016 star Yuri Putsman and Eurovision 2017 star Koit Toom. Now, Devin, what do those three artists have in common? Tanya, Yuri Putsman, and Koit.
Eurovision participations.
Yes, and none of them made the final.
Yeah. So I didn't want to draw that commonality.
Yeah, and Yuri actually finished last in his semifinal with Just Hit Play. That was a fan favorite. People were calling it Let's Hit Slay, but you know, I remember at the national final, I said this is going to finish last, and then it did. I got so much shade for that, by the way, but I just felt like the song wasn't up to him. Long story short, I want to get your general thoughts. Let's take this one by one. Tanya, are you excited?
I just kind of feel like artists need to evolve. And I don't want Eurovision to serve as a revolving door of just returnees. I need fresh faces. I'm much more excited about the names I haven't heard who are competing at Estilau. Or some of the names that I've heard at Estilau who didn't make it to Eurovision. I'm just, you know, Yuri Putzman and Tanya and what's his face? Why didn't you wake me up?
Stig Rasta.
Stig Rasta. I love them to bits, but you know what? Enough is enough, babe. You know, we need to kind of use your Eurovision appearances to gain mileage in your local music market.
Well, I've got to say, Tanya has repeatedly reinvented herself. She came back a few years later as part of, was it a trio singing like swing. There were three women, three men. It was awful.
One of the worst Estee Lau songs of
ever.
All time.
And so it's great she's got that out of her system. Yuri Putzman has been a few times. He's clearly very hungry. He's got great presence. I think he just needs a good song. Coit Toom, I loved him with Laura in Verona. We lost our Verona. They were shock non-qualifiers. However,
he was great in Birmingham as a qualifier.
I find his solo music a little cheesy. I'm sorry. It's like everything to me sounds like it should be on a Christmas album. I don't know. You know, it's just got this cheesy schmaltz.
He's got a great Michael Bublé feel about him without being jazzy.
But look, our readers are most excited about one act in particular. I'm going to read you three comments, and they basically all say the same thing. Colin writes, Yuri Putzman, my winner of 2016, is back, and it's not even my birthday. Sam says, Yuri is so beautiful, and he was robbed in 2016. And ESC Fan 2009 says, Play, Yuri's song, is one of my all-time favorites. I love the dark vibe and elegance that Yuri transported. So looking forward to his new entry.
Were you not working out with him on a beach in Israel?
I was in Tel Aviv. Lovely person, very, very kind. If he finds a song that suits him, I think it's going to be amazing. He can do amazing. Now, Dennis writes, if Coit's death stares are back as in 2017, I'm all for it. Now, Deben, I do have some tea for you. So during the live reveal of the songs, the kind of director-producer of Estee Lau said that Uku Suvisti's song actually went through the submission process. It was all anonymous, and his song would have gone through even without the free pass. So he hasn't just been handed a spot. The production team have said his song is better than last year and that he made it through anyway.
Oh, that's good news.
I actually heard a demo a few months ago, and I've got to say, it's much more modern. I think the big criticism for him last year was that the song sounded like it was from another era. Let's just say this year's entry is much more toward 2020 than what he had last year.
I think he would have qualified last year. There's something very Mikhail Spark about him where, you know, you pan the song, but it kind of builds momentum anyway. And come the semi-final, I think it would have snuck through.
Well, we're not the only Wee bloggers with thoughts on Estonia. Let's hear from Lauren, who has a funny story about her favorite. Take it away, girl.
Out of the many, many newcomers of Estee Lau 2020, I would say Hans Nina is the name to look out for. I say that, of course, because I've known Hans's music for over 2 years already, and I'll just say this. He's very different from your average Eurovision entrant. His usual music is less pop and more soulful blues and a dash of progressive and traditional African instruments. I highly recommend his 2016 album Music for the Soul. He comes from Mauritius. He sings in English and French and sometimes even Mauritian Creole, but his Estee Lau song will be in English. And to my understanding, it's not in his usual style, but instead in the Europop genre, which should be interesting to hear from him. He has had some local success in Mauritius, as well as in the nearby Réunion and Mayotte. But his connection to Estonia is fairly interesting. His girlfriend, his Estonian girlfriend, lived with him in Mauritius until earlier this year when she returned to Estonia. And he planned to go there for just 2 weeks in March, but then COVID-19 happened and he had to stay. And it looks like a blessing in disguise, really. He's now based in Estonia and ready to take Estee Lau by storm. And if you ask me, he can totally do it. He's got an amazing voice and he's a great composer. And I'm excited for One by One. I wish all the best for Hans.
Yeah, Now, Devin, that, of course, is Maria Isabel, who saleed for Spain and won the Junior Eurovision Song Contest. Junior Eurovision 2020 is just around the corner, and if previous trends continue, it should mean another success story for Spain. But while the Iberian nation accumulates great results at JESC, it's a completely different story when it comes to Eurovision, and Spain has been asking, why that? The disparity is one of the topics that website Eurovision Spain recently delved into in an interview with Toni Prieto, the RTVE entertainment director, and Ana Maria Bortas, Spain's head of delegation. Now look, Devin, Spain has never placed outside the top five at Junior Eurovision. Why do you think it's more successful there than at the adult ESC, where it's placed in the bottom five 5 years running?
Well, I mean, I think the answer here is simple, that there is no parity between Eurovision Song Contest and Junior Eurovision Song Contest. To the layman, it appears to be a junior version of the Mother Contest. And in some ways it is, but the terms and conditions, the rules for participation, and how countries are ranked are very different. And simply put, the rules and terms of participation favor Spain at the Junior Eurovision level. Simply put, Spain is a big country, 47.5 million voters. I'm not suggesting they have the same audience figures for JESC, but they can vote for themselves. That already puts Spain at a massive advantage at JESC.
I just want to point out on that, though, that rule has only been in effect for a few years, so Spain has only been able to vote for itself once. Maria Isabel won Junior Eurovision way back when you couldn't vote for yourself.
Well, okay. Putting that to one side, you know, to come top five in a field of 15 is very different than coming top five in a field of 43.
So absolutely. I think this is there are two big points for me. One, the fewer countries at Junior Eurovision. And two, adult Eurovision is more competitive because countries take it more seriously often. And our readers, the most voted comment comes from a woman named Olivia. Olivia says, they send better songs to JESC, simple fact. And Lollipop responds, that is the point, Olivia. The songs in JESC are fresh and look and feel authentic. The song fits the singer. And in ESC, it doesn't. And not to forget, she's not done. And not to forget, Pa'lante is a Latino-style banger that we expect from Spain.
I disagree. I think the songs, I'm not taking away from what is at JESC. I don't think it's remarkable by any means. But the songs at the Adult Eurovision have been criminally underrated. And I think that's partially due to really poor staging. I mean, Mickey's La Venda springs to mind. La Venda ya cayó. It's such a brilliant song. Had it, you know, closed the whole grand final. But then you bring this Paco on stage that just ruins everything. You know, it's a happy, joyous, you know, joy de vivre kind of party number. And then you're playing with a puppet for 3 minutes. Who needs that? You know, I love Edurne's entry. That was it.
Yeah.
You know, I think Spain has sent credible entries to Eurovision, but the response hasn't been as warmly received as one would expect. But it does not mean, sometimes the outcome does not necessarily indicate the quality.
Well, look, Anders P. on the Wooey Blogs website writes, staging, time and time again, Spain has sent good songs and wrecked them completely with messy, hyperactive staging. Mickey is a case in point with a house and a random robot. Beret pretending to break her ankle. It's like they have a brainstorm for a good idea, can't settle on one, and then decide to do all of them. That is so damning. Now, look, another point...
Before we move on, actually, another good point is that Spain don't actually value good feedback. I remember 2016, Spain. What's this about? You know, we're not, you know, just kind of putting feelers out like, oh, you know, the staging could be elevated. And the reaction was not pleasant. So...
Oh, no, absolutely. I said that the staging was a mess in rehearsal. And then in the interview, Beret's like, you're shady. And I'm like, no, it's constructive advice. And on YouTube as well, people who couldn't see the rehearsals what were commenting were like, oh, this is so anti-Spain. It wasn't anti-Spain. We loved Spain. We loved Beret. Say Yeah, Yeah was one of our favorite tracks. It was just the production team got it wrong. I mean, sometimes that just happens. You have a brilliant performer, a brilliant song, and then the staging just doesn't look right. And there was time to fix it.
And they've consistently got it wrong. I mean, sometimes to the point where you think, are you trying to sabotage this act? Because this is so good. How can you come up with this visual story?
Yeah, but also, I think they've learned that at JESC. They had a brilliant stage show last year. They had, with Melanie Garcia, the underwater aerial fantasy. It was absolutely amazing. It was one of the best stage shows we've seen, honestly. It was absolutely stunning. But look, I think there's one other point that no one's brought up. And I think one reason Spain may do better at Junior Eurovision comes down to the fact that I think Spanish people, you know, Spain culturally, people are very outgoing, very bubbly, very kind of camera aware, just in day-to-day life. When you meet Spanish, you know, Eurovision fans, they're among the liveliest, most exciting people. And I think in Spain, maybe people reach that at a younger age. And so at Junior Eurovision, their kids are just so much more, bam, camera ready. I do think it's a cultural thing that Spain, maybe it's their domestic TV programs, maybe it's, I don't know how people are raised, they're just ready, camera aware, and alive. And then, you know, at the adult Eurovision, obviously other countries have had time to catch up. Everybody's an adult, so everybody's ready to slay. But at that young age, maybe the Spaniards are just better equipped to handle the spotlight.
It'll remain a mystery.
We, of course, have a whole lot of love for Spain, and we've got some wee-wee bloggers down there with very strong opinions. Let's hear from Jordi.
I feel like one of the main reasons to why we see this disparity between the Junior Song Contest and the adult version of Eurovision in Spain, it mainly relies on the effort that the Spanish broadcaster is putting in, bringing in a full pack that can work overly great. What I mean for full pack is all the elements that are characterizing an Eurovision act, as could be the singer, the song selection, the song quality, the staging, the production, the wardrobe, all these elements that seem to flow and that is making an act of Eurovision. It had worked greatly for Spain in the junior contest, but it has failed quite a bit in the adult version. For example, in the adult version, the staging is quite an issue for Spain, but also when it comes to song selection, I sense that Spain is not as risky as it is in the Junior Eurovision Song Contest, and the song in the adult version do not provide fresher sounds, more distinctive, more characterizing as the ones we're hearing in the Junior Song Contest. And I think that whereas the competition is much bigger as it is in the adult version, this is an important element to consider. I think Spain could work much more in understanding what the adult version audience and what the audience is desiring to hear for.
Muchas gracias. Thank you so much. Now, Devin, you and I recently filmed a series of videos naming our favorite non-qualifiers from Albania and Armenia. And this is tied to a series of polls that we're doing on the WeWe Blogs website, where we go through all the countries that have had multiple non-qualifiers, and then our readers get a chance to vote. Now, for Armenia, you and I both individually chose who?
Savak Kami.
Exactly. And for Albania, we both chose who?
Lindita Halimi Bote.
And in Albania, neither of us chose Miss Hersiana Matmuja.
Oh, is she coming up on the WeWe Bloggers radar?
Well, yes. Robin Gallagher, who actually published those polls, she is now going to share with us her thoughts on the non-qualifiers and her favorites from Albania, Armenia, Austria, and Andorra. Robin, take it away.
Okay, my pick for Albania is a no-brainer. Hirsi Matmuja's 2014 song, One Night's Anger, is my happy place. The song is like the Eurovision equivalent of getting advice from a life coach or just a good friend, someone who can talk you down from an agitated state and put things into perspective amid the chaos of life. The song was ninth in the semi-final jury vote, and I've always felt that it deserves more recognition. And just remember, free your heart and let the peace enlighten your feelings. Andorra, meanwhile, sadly never made it to the Eurovision Grand Final, but they came so close in 2007. That year, the punk pop band Anonymous placed 12th in the mammoth 28-song semi. Their track Salvem Al Mon was an absolute ripper of a tune, full of spark and energy. There are so few pop rock tracks at Eurovision, and this one did it to perfection. Armenia, however, only has three songs that didn't make it out of the semis. None of them are bad per se, but it's more like, okay, the staging didn't quite work that year, or maybe the competition was really tough another time. My pick is Surbuk's Walking Out from last year, but I'd like to see it reimagined with different staging that doesn't involve the shots of the vast empty arena seats, which are now starting to feel darkly ironic in this age of social distancing. And without a doubt, for Austria, my pick is Trackshitters with their good time tune, Voki mit dem Popo. The whole thing was a bit of a hot mess with the glow-in-the-dark pole dancers, but at the same time, they brought good cheer and were even rapping in their Austrian regional dialect. Trackshitters crashed out in their 2012 semi, but Dead Last actually feels like a pretty punk result. Now is the time for Trackshitters to come back, disrupt things, and get everyone to shake their popo.
Okay, well, wow. I gotta say, I agree with her on Andorra. Anonymous was my favorite. I also think that I'm just shocked by her other answers. But this is the beauty of music. Everyone has a different opinion. What do you think about the Albania choice, Hersi Mamuja?
You take it away first, because I know you were obsessing about her tattoo.
Yeah, I love the tattoo, but it's curious. Robin says it's like a feel-good song, and I guess if you listen to the lyrics, no, I do take her point that it could be feel-good, but I just think of the visuals.
No, you don't take that point, girl, because I remember you going like, you here with this? you don't enjoy music like this.
Listen.
I love it.
Basically, I think the staging was really bad. I think she was on a plinth, basically. And like the only accessory was a tattoo of an eagle, which is great, a great statement to open with, but you got to move on. Like it was just a ball gown at the end of the day. Our girl Hersi can sing for days. I just wish she was singing it in Albania. I just think it's actually kind of cheesy, like to sing about one night of anger and like, I don't know. It just didn't do anything for me, but this is why we love music.
This is why I have a lot of respect for, you know, the Wee Wee jury, because it does take in a broad cross-section of taste, because I would never in a million years put Traction as forward as my favorite for Austria.
I gotta say, the staging was memorable. The staging was very, very memorable. The bright green, Woki mit dem Popo, you know, it's a very, very original theme. There were some unfortunate screen grabs and pictures, though, of the strippers with their poles and kind of, basically, it felt like a biology lesson at times, and I was not there for it.
It felt disrespectful to the contest and to the integrity of the show. I'm sorry, there was nothing good about it. To think that that beat the Queen of Austria with "That's What I Am, That's What I'll Always Be"? Are you kidding me?
But look, I actually think it's fate, though, because Conchita Wurst would not have won Eurovision with that song. And so in a way, this is where I get all fatalistic. I think the universe was conspiring, saying, listen, Conchita, your time will come. It's just not now. So let them work their ass in Baku, and you save your business, you save your voice, and you get ready to slay in Copenhagen with Hersi Mamuja. All right, Devin, we can't have a podcast without some more rumors from Aftonbladet about Melodifestivalen in 2021. The big hot rumor is that SVT producers are in chat/negotiation with Erik Saade. This is not confirmed, but they really want him. Apparently, he has a song likely in Swedish because he's shifted to Swedish language songs in recent years, but it's all still up in the air. What's your first thought?
Don't come back. If there's anything to learn, absolutely. If there's anything to be learned from Laureen's statements, is that when you've done so well, you've won Melody Festival and you've gone, my goodness, listen, when he came back in 2015 with Sting,
it was amazing.
Can I just point out that everybody thought it was a case of Måns Zelmerlöw versus Erik Saade. So actually, people thought that Erik Saade would win or at worst place second. He placed fifth. You know what? He's already
in a tough field. John Henrik Fjällgren had so much fabulosity going on.
Listen, you can create excuses for every vowel. The reality is that he shouldn't have come back. He's already been to Eurovision with Popular. Placed, what, top three?
Third,
yeah. I mean, come on. And you've brought out compilations of albums. You've done very well. You've had strong singles impression in the Swedish music market. What more are you going to achieve? You know what? It's fine.
You know what, Zabin? Sometimes people have to do things for themselves and because they just want to. He has a lot of money. He doesn't need Melody Festivalen. But you know what? I think Melody Festivalen needs him. He is a breath of fresh air, so much energy. He was brilliant as a host. I think in that battle between Måns Zelmerlöw and Erik Saade, he was more freewheeling. He was more dangerous. He was more, in many ways, more exciting. Now, we love us a Måns Zelmerlöw, don't get us wrong. But I think they're very different flavors. And I gotta say, I spent a lot of time with him in that Melody Festival. And he was in a story I wrote for Bloomberg Business Week. He was doing a lot of stuff for Wee Blogs. And he was just so lovely. People think of him as being, you know, he plays this role, this cocky kind of jerk, like particularly in the song Sting, because the song is ultimately about, you want to be cool, but you're not as cool as me. Oh my God, you can't get my girl. But he's actually amazing. He's so lovely, so funny. He had the whole dick point of view thing where he likes to take selfies from the point of view of his dick. Do you remember this? Hashtag DPOV. He's witty. No. He brings something fresh. He was recently, you'll remember, the spokesman for Sweden at Eurovision 2019. His father is Palestinian, and there was sort of a veiled message in his delivery when he said, I'm not there, maybe in the future. I just think he's very complex. He's a bit of an onion. And I didn't endorse him by anybody saying, what I'm just saying is he's an interesting person who's got a lot to say. And that's why I think he'd be great for Melody Festival. Yeah. Melody Festival is not just about people who've been there in the past or new people, but it's the mix. And he brings something new to the mix. And that's why I want to see him back.
And I think it's dangerous that you propel this point of view because this is... This is what creates delusion. You know, that's why some artists think that, oh yeah, I'll just try again next year. I'll just try again the year after. I think of all these artists to emerge from Melody Festival in recent years, there are two people I give credit to. Let me just start by shouting out to Måns Zelmerlöw. You do your idol thing, you come in, slay at Melody Festival and pick up like 9 awards. And yes, you're still very much involved with the Eurovision community, but in a different vein, in a different way.
He entered Melody Festival in multiple times. He came back repeatedly before he won. Hope and Glory, Cara Mia.
Post-victory, you haven't seen him back. And the same thing goes to our girl, Sanna Nielsen. She's not going to come back. We are done. You know, it's done.
It's been 6 years. Melody Festival in 2021 will be 6 years since Melody Festival in 2015. He's welcome to come back as many times as he wants because he brings quality.
Let him come back as a songwriter. Let him come back as a visual merchandiser. Let him come back as a commentator. As a presenter. Oh my God, there's so many roles available. You don't have to hog the mic again and just grab it and then, we're done. Even come back like Hera Bjork as a backing singer, I'll still have more respect for you than wanting to kind of do the whole puppetry of it all over.
You know what? Maybe in recent years, he's switched to Swedish language singles. So perhaps he wants to show off his Swedish language songs to his motherland. And there ain't nothing wrong with that. Melody Festival is a chance for reinvention, for personal revolution, and he is armed and ready to slay.
Great. Go and sing for your crown princess. Nobody needs you on the Melody Festival on stage. We are done.
And Devin, we have one more story for you involving Melody Festival. And producers have scrapped the rule that required there to be one female songwriter on each entry. They said that it does not fix underlying equality issues. This is the quote from producer Karen Gunnarsson. She said, a compulsion is perhaps not so inspiring and creative, so we're going back on it. Our ambition for a more equal Melody Festival remains and is something we will continue to work with. Now, just in case you don't know, in 2014, Melody Festival introduced a requirement that 20% of song contest songs should have at least one female songwriter. And then in 2015, the quota was increased increased to 50%, and it remains that way today. What do you make of all this, Devin?
I'm disappointed because when they came up with that rule, I was like really excited and in favor of it. I like the idea of seeing this huge disparity in, you know, gender participation and trying to fix it. And whilst it's a good idea to unfix it if it doesn't solve the underlying equality issues, you've got to kind of test run it. And they haven't had a chance to do that. So they put out this new rule, which they're recalling in less than 6 months. They haven't even given it a road test. So that's disappointing for me.
Well, Donkey has the most voted comment on WeeWeeBlogs.com. He or she writes, "It was a dumb rule, in my opinion. Glad that it's gone. Gender isn't what makes a song good or bad. It is the actual songwriter's skills." To which Jonas replies, "Nobody ever argued that gender is what makes a song good or bad. You have misunderstood the whole point." And this is very interesting. The point is to encourage more females to have access, you know, to these strong songwriting teams, to encourage women to submit songs. I mean, the intention was good. Their intention was in the right place, but it seems that it was widely mocked and that it wasn't actually having the impact it needed to. You know what? Ultimately, I think, Devin, what's going to encourage female songwriters to submit more songs is for other women to have songs that slay. Laurel Barker, she's had many songs make the finals and indeed go to Eurovision. She's had songs in the Melody Festival and final. You've got the likes of Sharon Vaughn has had so many Melody Festival and hits. You've got Linnea Deb. Yeah, I just think these women are already flying the flag. I think they just need to encourage their sisters to do the same. And, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. These things take years. You need role models. And I think there are role models out there for young women. And you just have to hope that that's enough. I mean, because I do take the point that sometimes putting artificial boundaries on things can muddy the waters.
And I agree with that partially. But I think that you can only draw those concrete conclusions when you've given it a road test. If, you know, yeah, you may think, well, actually, you know, does this stifle creativity? Well, let's find out in 2021. Sweden is at the point now where it is really a pioneer. You know, it sets the trend and it can afford to take risks. You know, it's done very well at Eurovision. It's had pretty much top 10 finishes every year, bar Anna Bergendahl. And I think it's just, it wouldn't have been a bad idea to have kind of maintained that rule for 2021 and then revisit post-2021 Melody Festival.
Yeah, and just to clarify what I meant earlier, I think sometimes if you say, oh, you've got to include a woman, it implies that there aren't strong female songwriters. This is what Brie Kimchi writes on Wee Blogs. She says, "The rule didn't make sense in the first place. It inherently implied that women were not capable of having songs selected based on their own merit. There are plenty of female songwriters in Sweden who have submitted quality songs to Melfest in the past. Forcing songwriting teams to stick a female name on their credits for the sake of quotas isn't going to encourage genuine submissions from worthy contributors." So it raises a question. Maybe some people were just tacking on a female name, having already written the song, and it kind of cheapened the process, if you will, because it wasn't a sincere contribution.
What I would like, you know, if I was on the seat, what I would do is one from Thomas Jason, one from Frederick Shempe, one from Peter Bostrup. Like, we don't need, because, you know, your alliance is split if you have like six songs competing, you know? Yes,
of course. From the same
Yeah, from the same edition of Melody Festival. And yes, it strengthens your chances of one of them actually winning. But then you're now using the artists as pieces on a chessboard. I would like one submission per songwriting team. That way you can really broaden the scope you get.
Girl, bye. I believe in a market economy. I like markets. You know what? You put out your submission. If it slays, it'll fly. If it doesn't slay, it'll flop. That's fair. How about this? You ain't got a song this year, you up your game for next year. If you upped your game, submit 12 songs, six of them get in, you go boy, you go girl, okay?
That is so American.
You know what? Meritocracy is the name of the game. Of course, at Melody Festival, and it's not always a meritocracy, actually, because half the acts are chosen for their kind of ratings value, you know, the soap opera star. Because it's not just about the best songs, it's about what's most entertaining for viewers. And so it's a slightly different picture. It's just very complicated. I mean,
it's,
I guess,
viewed towards television. Sometimes a lot more than, music is secondary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a TV show at the end of the day. It's a TV show. And all I know is this, there are a lot of good female songwriters submitting songs. I mean, Linnea Deb, Laurel Barker, we could go on. Who's that? Lisa Cable in Denmark?
Sharon Vaughn.
Oh, I love Sharon Vaughn. They're like, what, monoliths? Give me Now, as ever, our new music editor, Jonathan Votri, has given us some hot takes from this week in music. Jonathan, take it away.
Belgian Eurovision stars Laura Tesoro and Loïc Notet have finally released a collaboration together. Strangers is a mid-tempo song that discusses the difficulties of love when things aren't working out anymore. Both Laura and Loïc get their time to shine, tackling one verse each, and then they come together in the chorus to provide some great harmonies. With the relatively slow rhythm of the song, it's the voices of these two stars that really draws the listener in. The alliance between Laura and Loïc, who are both the same age and nationality, is strong. And hopefully we'll be able to hear more from them as a duo in the future. A year and a half after winning Eurovision 2019, Duncan Lawrence has finally released his debut album. Titled Small Town Boy, it showcases the journey that the Dutch singer has been on over this time. The album starts off slowly, with the first few songs setting up an atmospheric singer-songwriter style. Things then begin to build from his Eurovision entry Arcade onwards, as the sound transitions more towards indie pop, with songs such as Someone Else and Love Don't Hate It. It then culminates with Lawrence's EDM collaboration with Armin van Buuren, Feel Something. It's definitely an album of two halves. While some may tune out during the first slower half, those who stick around will get to hear the full spectrum of what Duncan Lawrence can offer as an artist.
Now, Devin, I know you love getting on a plane, going abroad, but you know what you love even more?
I love coming home to a nice Hungarian hit.
Yes, a Hungarian-American hit, András Kale Saunders, has revealed that his new song, Coming Home, was destined for Idol. He wanted to compete in Idol and go to Eurovision, but sadly, Hungary ain't in the game no more. Let's hear what he has to say about the single. Chokolom, András.
Hello to everyone at WeWe Blogs and all Eurovision fans. For those of you who may not know, my name is András Kale Saunders. I represented Hungary in the 2014 Eurovision Song Contest. I placed fifth. And I know it's not a secret, but Hungary is not taking part in Eurovision once again, which truly makes me sad. I remember Eurovision was one of the most beautiful moments in my career as a musician, as a singer, something I will never forget. And I honestly planned on returning and standing on that stage again, representing my country. But who knows when that can happen again. Something positive, my album's just released. It came out on November 6th. It's called Never Noticed. There's a song on the album called Coming Home. And that's the song that I wanted to send in for Eurovision. But like I said before, that's impossible. This song is about one of my friends. He was a soldier at war in Afghanistan, and he had a journal on him, and he would write down all his experiences, everything he went through, let it be good or bad. And he gave me this journal, and based on his journal, I wrote this song. And yeah, this would have been my Eurovision entry. I actually recorded a Hungarian version for it yesterday, because even though they're not sending anyone to represent Hungary for the Eurovision Song Contest, they're still going to have the Idol competition. The only difference is that they don't allow you to sing in English anymore. I don't know why, but I made a Hungarian version yesterday. I sent it in, so we'll see if I make it. And besides that, I just want to say thank you all the way from 2014 when we first met, when we did our first interview. Thank you for your support, and thank you for anybody who supports me. Love you all, and I hope one day in the future we can meet again at Eurovision. Love you all. Peace. I'm coming home.
Kusunum Sepan, you slay. Well, that's all from us this week on the WeWe Blogs podcast. Your hosts were Debonetta Rimi,
William Lee Adams.
This episode was produced by Samuel George, and the posts that we discussed were written by Louise Fuster, Jordi Pedra, Rinska Tinveen, Porig Muldoon, Esma Jansen, and Ms. Robin Gallagher. And our new music roundup was, of course, by Jonathan Votri. We will see you later. Bye! you gonna slay today? Hey, hey, how you gonna slay today? How you gonna slay today? Hey, hey, how you gonna slay today? Yes.